Well, Merry Christmas. Okay, well, try to convince me of that later, I guess. Yeah, it's December 1st. I mean, it's the beginning, and it is a busy time of year. I know that, this time, as December hits, we're starting to think about what it is we're going to buy somebody, what kinds of things maybe are on our Christmas list. And as we think about these things, last year I talked a little bit about some of the hot-selling items for kids or things that kids would really want. I figured I'd start off December 1st with that same sort of thing for some shopping days. I actually ended up for a really strange, unrelated thing. I am not a Black Friday shopper. And I was at Walmart Thanksgiving evening to get something. I kind of wish that there was like maybe one of our Walmarts or like a store on a night like that, that they would say, if you're here for the insanity, you can't come to this one. This is just for regular people. It would have like a regular need. You know what I mean? Like, where's that store? That was not the one that I went to. But while I was there, I thought, well, let's go ahead and see if I can find a few of these toys that they say are the number one toys for kids this year. Of the few that I'm going to show you, two of them were off the shelves. They promised that they would be out for Good Friday, but they said when they come in, we can't keep them on the shelves. I'll show you which ones those are. But the first one, again, in this kind of top 10 list, the first one, Toby, it's all you, buddy. We're having some Wi-Fi issues. Wi-Fi is not prepared for Christmas. But the first one is this one. It's this Q-Tito's. Q-Tito's, if you can't tell, it's a burrito. But it's not a burrito. It's a stuffed animal. But it's actually not a tortilla shell either. It's a blanket. And when you buy it, you don't know what stuffed animal you get because they don't show it to you. They just show you the burrito. What is this? I just don't get it. There's this huge popularity right now on kids' toys or items where the kid doesn't know what it is. And then you buy it, and then you're surprised what it is. Isn't that the whole point of wrapping the thing in the first place? But yeah, so a kid would buy this, the Q-Tito's, because they want their burrito animal. And I just think there's all kinds of consumption issues that come up with me when I see this. Like, I'm thinking, like, isn't the marketing here? Like, if I was like, hey, market a stuffed animal, but make it really weird, like we eat it in a burrito. And then this is what you would create. But nobody thinks that when they see this. But I'm just thinking you want to eat this, whatever it is. But no, it's your loving stuffed animal, so why would you ever eat it? Because it's in a burrito. I don't understand these. But Q-Tito's, this is a real popular item. They do have that on the shelves there at Walmart. This next one, though, this is one that they can't keep on the shelves here. This is the Bobby the Booty Shaking Llama. I'm dead serious. So since it wasn't on the shelves, I had to YouTube this thing and see what it does. And that's what it does. It's a llama, and it says it has a button that says, try me. I wanted to find one. I could push it so bad. But right next to the try me, it says, I shake my booty and dance to three epic songs. Now, I have seen it dance, and it fully shakes its booty. And the three epic songs, I don't know what the definition for epic is, but I can't even remember what they were because I was so taken by the dance moves of this twerking llama. So that one you can't keep on the shelves. And it comes in different colors and whatnot. So, yeah. Next one. This one also is one they can't keep on the shelves. This is the Butt Heads. It's called the Wowee Butt Heads Interactive Farting Figurines. They fart three different ways. They all have giant fingers you can pull. And they make three different sounds depending on what setting you want to put it on. The one on the left is kind of a ninja themed, and his name is Tushy. The one in the middle is a robot, and he is Robot. And the one on the right there is the brain of the group, and he is Brainfart. So I'm wondering what has come of our world. And then the next thing I know, I have one of these now on my Christmas list. I just have to have one. So my sister is visiting from out of town. She was in first service today, and she goes, I know what I'm getting you for Christmas. And I was happy. So I'll let you know how it works. The last one is another really confusing, disturbing. This is, again, in the top 10 list. And this is the Treasure X Aliens. Now, they have these on the shelf right now at Walmart. At least they did on Thanksgiving evening. But this is an interesting one, because this, you dissect an alien, which you're like, okay, well, that's kind of weird enough as it is. But here's the storyline for the product. There's an alien hunter. The alien hunter has a gun, and he's a hunter, and he's the good guy. And he has gone out to hunt an alien. In the process of hunting the alien has captured him and then ate him. And then somehow you've shown up on the scene, and you now cut the alien open to rescue the alien hunter. I don't even know what messages this is sending to children, but if you get this for your kid, they get to cut up open an alien with a gooey thing to get out the guy that was trying to kill the alien in the first place. And everybody's saved, or no one's saved. I don't know. Weird, weird toys. But these are the ones I want to show you. These are four of the top 10 in that top 10 listing. There are some others in there that were really boring, but these were the ones that I thought were interesting. So if you are, kind of looking in this area of, like, you know, what do I need to buy or what do I need to get? I really wanted to start our series on Traveling Light looking at this idea of our ownership or consumption or really the place that some of these things have in our lives, because it's a time to at least make some adjustments. The series is called Travel Light, and we're going to talk about ways that, you know, we all are traveling through this life. In fact, as followers of Christ, one of the things I want to be sure I kind of get across in this series is that this place is not your home. Earth is not our home. We have a heavenly home that we are going to. We are all just traveling through. And as we travel through, we all have our luggage. We all have baggage that we take with us. And inside of our luggage sometimes are things that shouldn't be in there, or things that don't need to be in there, or things that are heavy in there. We have hurts that are in there. We have things that have made us victims in life that we carry around in these trunks. And some of these things are really heavy. Sometimes there is things that maybe seem really small, like seeds, but they're really heavy or really destructive, like, you know, a seed of discontentment in our lives. And so we carry these things around, and we protect some of these things. We try to make sure no one looks in our trunk or looks in our suitcase to see what's there. Other people, they just kind of open their trunk and say, this is all the issues I've got going on. And you get that, like, you know, when you first meet them. But we all are traveling through life with luggage. And the things that are in here, some things are good to carry along, and other things we should be letting go of, or some things we should be getting rid of. And so today I want to talk through some of these things, because I really want us to lighten our load as we travel through life. Now, I realize that today, as I talk about, you know, this financial baggage is the title of our message today, that I may step on a few toes today. I want you to know I don't mean to, and I certainly don't want to. But there are some things we're going to talk about today that may be values of yours, and I'm going to challenge some of those values. And anytime someone challenges one of your values, you can take, offense to those in some way. So if there's something I say today that you take offense to, I encourage you to send your emails to jensimons@siouxfallschurch.com, and she'll field all those and answer all your questions about it. So, but seriously, there is a tendency sometimes when we're challenged in something that we value. I just want you today to have an open mind of maybe a couple of new ideas, realizing you don't have to take any of these, and you can continue with life as is. But I think that there is some things that are valuable or worth us talking about. So for a starting point, a place that I hope that we can all agree on, no matter where you are on this spectrum, is this. Is it is better to have less of what doesn't matter than more of what does. Now, can we agree on that? It is better in life to have less of what doesn't really matter and to have more of what does matter. I mean, that may not be like mind-blowing to you or earth-shattering in any way, but you do realize that we live in a culture that does not support this idea. I mean, we live in a culture that says you need more, more, more. You know, if one is good, two is better. If one is sort of new and something new comes out, the new one is always better. And they kind of downplay what it's always this idea of have more, regardless of how good it is for you in your life. This is kind of the message our culture sends our way. And as we look at the stories in the Bible, we're going to see a very interesting reoccurring theme throughout the scriptures. And to kind of point to what this recurring theme is, think back to the very beginning of the Bible with the Genesis account with Adam and Eve. God creates the world. He creates Adam and Eve and everything in the world. And then he says that everything he created is good. In fact, not only good, he says it is very good. And in that creation, as he's created humanity, he also said to Adam and Eve, you are kind of the masters. You have dominion over. You have been given the responsibility of this creation. The earth, the planets, the whole thing. And you run it. You manage it type idea. And he says, this is a good thing. The thing is that with Adam and Eve, even though they're given good things and all that they have is good, and I mean so good that there's no death, you know, there's no disease, they get to actually be in communion with, like proximity to God, like this presence of God. So it's good on all levels of good. But God says there's one place in this garden, in the very center, there's a tree there, and don't eat the fruit on that tree. It's the one thing you don't eat. It's a tree of knowledge of good and evil. You see, if Adam and Eve eat this fruit, then they're going to lose all that is good. They're going to lose all of this. And you know the story. They do. They end up eating it. In fact, I always find it interesting when I ask people if we're talking about the story. I say, do you know what fruit was on that tree? Like, God says, don't eat the fruit from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And most people assume right off the bat that the fruit is what? Apple. That's what you always see. I want you to know the Bible doesn't say anything about it being an apple, doesn't describe it looking like an apple. So if we are just guessing what it is, I guess it was broccoli. So they ate the broccoli, and then they went to hell. So that's what happens when you eat broccoli. Why is it that the one thing that they wanted is the one thing they can't have? And am I alone in this? Because I'm this way. You see, you forget about all the good that's around you. Forget about all the good that you have. And you start to think, I will be happy or I'll be content or everything will be right when I get this other thing. And so I hold hostage all things that are good in my life until I get this other thing. And when have we ever gotten that other thing and everything been all right? Right? Because then there's just another thing that you need and another thing that you need. And it was the same for Adam and Eve, and it's the same for me. You just never find contentment. We're never okay until we get this thing that we think that we want, and it doesn't bring the satisfaction that we think it's going to bring. Or it doesn't bring the feeling, the good feeling that we think it's going to bring. It's just momentary. It's not lasting. Because we believe that our happiness is found in that which we don't have, and it isn't. That's not where our happiness is found. Everything that you have that is good in your life can be on a back seat. Take a back seat to this idea of some idea of what you think this thing is that you need in your life. And your focus starts to become what you don't have instead of your focus being on what you do have. You know, I need some new style of phone, or, you know, I need another $100 a month in my paycheck, or I need a bigger house, or I need a car that's better than my current car. I need a bigger family. I need more friends. I need more likes. I need more whatever it might be. You name it. And what we don't have becomes what we believe that we need in order to be happy, or what we need to be fulfilled, or what we need to be complete. I can remember a time in my life when I was about 13 years old, and I was spending a couple of weeks with my grandparents at a campground in the state of Oregon, and they stayed at a place called Diamond Lake. The campground was Thielson View Campground because the mountain Thielson View was on the other side of the lake and you could view it. So brilliant on naming that campground that. But when we were there, they had this old 70s Silver Streak trailer, and this was probably in 82 or 83, somewhere around those that time frame. And when we would camp, we would stay in this trailer. Well, my grandmother, she's making dinner, and at 13, I was under 5 feet tall, and between 13 and 16, I would go from just about 5 feet to 6'2". And then I would go a couple more inches a few months later and make it to 6'4", to my current height. It takes a tremendous amount of calories to grow a human being over a foot in a 2-year period of time. It's also painful on that individual, by the way. But my body was starting to tell me, eat, eat, eat. And once I hit my height, it stopped sending the signal, but I ignored it. I just kept eating. But I needed those calories, and I was eating, I think, at certain times, the amount of calories for 2, 3, 4 people, and I could just, it was amazing the amount of food I could consume, and this was just starting. It kind of threw my grandma by surprise, so she made dinner, and I mean, I cleared it off, and she's like bringing out leftovers, and I'm eating everything, and we're in her trailer. It's not like there's a ton of extra stuff, and when it's all said and done, she can tell I'm still hungry, and she's, you know, my grandpa's like, wow, I have never experienced this before. And she says, do you want dessert? Which sounded to me like, do you want air to breathe? Of course I want dessert. Well, in the freezer, in the trailer, was this half gallon of ice cream, and it was an ice cream I loved. It was like a vanilla chocolate swirl with caramel and toffee chips in it, and oh my goodness, it was so good. And so she said, you can go in the trailer and you can eat some ice cream. So I got it out, peeled the top off. I'm the first one scooping into this thing. I look for the biggest bowl I can find in the trailer, and I scoop and I fill this bowl full. And I mean, I eat it, and I eat it like it is air. Like I'm just consuming this ice cream. And when it's all said and done, and now my bowl is empty, and I see that container, I think, I want another bowl. So I eat another bowl of ice cream and another bowl of ice cream. And I pretty much consumed the entire half gallon of ice cream. And my stomach is in a shape it has never been prior to that. Even Buddha himself would be jealous at the kind of round basketball thing I had going on. And then, at 13 years old, had never experienced this before, I had a feeling in this region I hadn't felt before. And all of a sudden, I realized that regardless of really where I was in my faith, I was about to have an exorcism. You know what I mean? And I don't know what to do, but I can tell time is short. It's time for quick decisions. And I decide the best place to go is into the little bathroom they have inside the trailer. Now, we weren't really allowed to use that very often, because in an old trailer like that at a campground, there are rules as to what you do and don't do in there. But no one had ever mentioned that you couldn't have an exorcism in there. So I'm in this bathroom, and to kind of make a long story short, I just painted that bathroom differently than it was before, okay? Everything that I had in me was no longer in me. I was free. I was cleansed. I learned a couple of interesting things, that a half gallon of ice cream does not go well with 4 trout, because I had had about 4 rainbow trout for dinner. That's a weird combination inside of a system. But it does all come out easily, so that was beneficial. I learned a principle that day, aside from ice cream and trout, that I do want to teach you today, because what I learned that day is an age-old truth, so old that even Solomon wrote about this in the scriptures. And in Ecclesiastes 4:6, it says this, and yet it is better to have one handful with quietness than 2 handfuls with hard work and chasing the wind. Now, you might look at that and say, I'm not exactly sure what that has to do with what we're talking about. I mean, I can see the whole one thing, the two thing. It's better to have one of something and enjoy the blessing than to have more of that, and then it becomes problematic for you. In fact, if I were to do this in a different translation, like the PDV translation. The PDV translation says it like this. And yet, it is better to have one bowl of ice cream with contentment than 5 bowls and then paint the bathroom with vomit. See, that's what my version would say. That's what it means. is it's better to have just one than to continue to have and have and have, and in the process you lose the blessing of the one and what all that you've gained or all that you're trying to maintain or all that you're trying to organize or all that you're trying to somehow hang on to becomes a problem for you. So better to be content with less or to have more of what matters and have less of what really doesn't matter. And so I learned this lesson early on in life, and it's one that has served me well when I have focused on it. And I think that it is better to have less of what doesn't matter and more of what does. And the reason why I think this is true is because I do believe that your life is way too valuable to not live by this or to believe this. I believe that your calling in this world is too important than to not understand this or live by this. I also believe that your God is way too good to you and to all of us than to be wasted on the things that don't matter. And I think if we don't focus on what really does matter, we're going to miss it. And your life is too important to miss it. Your calling is too important. Your God is too good for you to miss this and get swept away or taken away by all the things that are around us, all the sparkly things and the flashy lights that seem to surround us. Jesus was really concerned about this, and he talked about this in many different occasions and in many different ways. He's telling a story at one point about these two sons who were concerned about their inheritance, and he said these words in Luke 12:15. He said, "Beware, guard against every kind of greed. Life is not measured by how much you own." These are Jesus' words, that life is not measured by how much you own. Do you agree with this? I mean, our culture does not support this. And our practices probably don't prove this. But if it's true, it's true. I mean, Jesus is saying it. Our life is not measured by our stuff, what we own, what we have. Everything in our culture is telling you the opposite. But you are not what you have. You are not what you own. You're not what you drive. You're not what you wear. You are not your stuff. We try to convince ourselves. We try actually very hard to convince ourselves that we are what we own. That somehow wearing something makes us to be something. Having something makes us be something. And it's not true. Never has been true. Never will be true. And if you think that it's true, it's a facade. And it just will, in moments, prove itself one way or another. I mean, they even say if you go like to a job interview, like they talk about certain things that you should wear so that someone sees you a certain way. I've even heard where they say you need to be sure when you go to a job interview and like you pull out your phone for the next appointment, it better be like the top of the line, like most modern thing for that employer to be able to see that you're on like your cutting edge kind of person. I think it might communicate something different to an employer that gets it. Like, why in the world do you have a $1,200 computer in your pocket? Why is that necessary? I think if someone pulls out a flip phone, I'd go, oh yeah, you got it going on, you know? Like you know, perspective. We think that if we have this stuff, it communicates something of value to us. But how does the kind of phone that you have or don't have determine your value? Because we give it value? What's God's value? What's God's perspective on all of this? The lie is that if you don't have the thing that you think that you need, that you won't find the happiness that you're looking for. Or you're not going to be able to fit in the way that you want to fit in, or that you're going to feel inadequate in some way. Some of you maybe have even tuned me out already. You're kind of done with this topic, like just move on. But if that is you, give me just 30 seconds to consider this thought. What if the stuff you have is robbing you of the life that you want? What if all the stuff that you have is actually robbing you from the life that you want to have? I do a mic drop, but it's not very impressive with a little one that goes on your face. What I want to do today is I want to address something here at this moment in life when you are about to go buy a whole bunch of junk. And if the one handful idea is good. And if two handfuls or more makes us crazy and chasing after the wind, what does one handful living look like? So I want to offer you a couple quick thoughts, two quick thoughts on this, on what one handful living looks like. First thing it looks like is this: throw stuff out. The stuff that you have, that you don't need, that you've not been looking at, that you're not even aware what all it is anymore, it's time to get rid of it. It's time to throw these things out. Most of us have way more than we need. And we would really be freed up in our lives if we just got rid of all of this stuff. Because your life shouldn't be about the accumulation of stuff and the continual storage of this stuff. Places like storage facilities, we should be putting them out of business. They are loving the fact that you're going to go there and monthly pay rent to put stuff in there that you are never going to look at again. It is crazy. Because you are not your stuff. The stuff you have does not communicate your value. Your value is not connected to those items. And I'm not just talking about decluttering. That's such a popular word today. We need to declutter. We need to de-own. You need to let go of these things, throw them out, get rid of them. I mean, would you agree with me that it is way better to own less than just organize more? I mean, for some of us, we are literally trying to organize 2, 3, 4 houses worth of stuff into our one house. I want you to know the most effective way to keep all that stuff and organize it well and in a real small container is to light it all on fire, because the ashes fit in a drawer way better than the item itself. And you'll look at it just as often. Just say, like, label it, these are the ashes of that thing. I'm not going to ever look at it or use it anyways, but I still have it, the essence of it, right? The Bible tells about this this one guy. They don't give him a name other than the name Rich Young Ruler. And this guy has a lot of stuff. The scripture makes it pretty clear that he owns a lot of things. He's the kind of guy that has the BMW chariot. He's got the Nike sandals. He's got the gold tin can, you know, with the string on it, the latest phone technology. He has got it all. And he comes to Jesus and he says, how do I connect with God? Like, how do I do this God thing that you're talking about? And Jesus responds to him by saying something that he had never said before that, and he never says again after. Some people get kind of confused by Jesus' words because they think, this is me. This is what he's saying to me. He might be saying it to you, but he is saying something very specific to this man, because this man owns a lot of stuff and his stuff is kind of owning him. And so when he comes and he says, what do I need to do to get right with God and to get this thing figured out? Jesus says, this is what you do. Sell all your possessions, every last one of them. And then after you sell them all, take all that pile of money and give it to the poor. And then once that happens, you're going to have a treasure in heaven. You're going to have a kingdom value. So basically, the thing that's getting in the way of your relationship with God is all your stuff. So just sell it all. And then that money's going to get in the way, so give it all away. And then after you do that, you're going to find a value, a treasure that you've never found before. That's how you do it. Okay? That's for this guy. And so this guy now is confronted with the most valuable thing he's ever been offered. And how does he respond? Matthew 19:22, one of the saddest verses, I think, in the Bible. It says, but when the young man heard this, he went away very sad, for he had many possessions. He walked away from the most valuable thing he had ever come across before because he could not fathom giving up all his stuff. He walked away sad, didn't get the thing that he wanted because he had so much stuff. What Jesus is not saying here, Jesus is not saying it's a sin to have stuff. It is not a sin to have stuff. You can have stuff. You're not to go, you know, live with, like, wearing a loincloth, you know, like a hermit out somewhere. That's not what Jesus calls us to. It's totally okay to have stuff. It's not a sin to have stuff, but it is a sin when your stuff has you. That's where the problem comes in. When the stuff starts owning you instead of you owning the stuff, if I can't say no to it, if I can't get rid of it, if I can't throw something out, it has a grip on me. It's taken a place. It's taken residence in me in a different way than what God wants those things to have in our lives. Every single one of us is created with this spiritual void, but we're born with it, or we're created with it. And that void can only be filled by God, and when it is filled by God, there is true fulfillment there. When we take that void and we decide not to fill it with God and we try to fill it with stuff, whether it be, you know, an iPhone or a house or a car or even kids or a spouse or other things in our life, when we try to fill it with something other than God, it leaves us empty. It leaves us still wanting more because it's just becomes this empty or endless pit that we throw things into. The only thing that ever fills it and keeps it full and keeps us satisfied is when that focus is God and God himself. Because when we decide to fill it with anything other than God, I want you to know that everything that we try to fill that void in our life with is an idol. It is something that we worship. It's something that we value. It's something we sacrifice for the sake of obtaining this thing, giving everything we have to it, and then it leaves us empty because it's an idol. It's a false god. You know, you'll never really know what idols you have in your life until Jesus asks you to give those up. Because when he asks you to give them up, that's where the rubber hits the road for us. Maybe this morning is going to be one of those mornings where you're going to be challenged to give something up. And I hope you don't walk away sad because you have much. Now, I want to be honest about why it is so difficult to throw things out. I want to be as practical as I can about this as well. It's because of fear, I think, and sentiment in our lives. I think that there are things, boxes of stuff, things that we've never looked at that we're afraid to throw out because, first of all, we have fear about that. We think that we might need them. I might need this someday in the future. But we never do. Or we think, well, what if my kids need it? Your kids aren't going to want it. But I think there's this thing in us that we have to challenge ourselves with and say, if this is all about like what my kids need or what my kids like, or like I might need this in the future, and if it's just hanging on to all this stuff and it really doesn't have value to you in life, but you're just holding it on for that reason, why not give it up and just trust God that if you need that, that somehow he'll make that need met 5 years, 10 years, 20, 30, 40 years down the line when you actually do need that thing? Might be better off to let go of it now and just trust God for whatever that is in the future. And then secondly, what about letting go of all this stuff that is just stored up in your house and bless someone else with it? Why not let go of it of yourself that you're not using it or being blessed by it and let someone else use it, make use of it, and make memories and be blessed by whatever these items are? I think that's the challenge with our fear, is let go of the fear and just trust God. Trust that he can provide if you do need something again that you already have, but you're going to declutter, not just declutter, you're going to de-own. And then bless someone else with those items. But I think the sentiment is the other part of it that's really tough for people. You know, people like hang on to things because of they have sentimental value. These are my first shoes I ever wore. Who cares? You're not going to wear them again. No kids that you have or grandkids are going to wear these things. Someday you're going to die. People are going to open up the box and go, what the world are these old shoes in here for? Someone might know the story. They're going to laugh at you and then throw it out. Just get rid of it now. Like, why do we hang on to these things? You know, this is my son's first poopy diaper. Remember way back 30 years ago? We've hung on to this special bundle of joy for 30 years. I try to think of it that way, of things I hold on to. Would I hang on to that? That seems to be special. No, we throw those things out. We need to get rid of those things. One time, Jenny and I, we were traveling somewhere. We stayed in this hotel, and we turned on cable TV. We had kind of cut the cable years and years ago, and so sometimes you get a kick out of these home improvement channel shows, and there was this home improvement channel show that came on, and this gal was off her rocker, and I was making so much fun of her. She's an organizer, a declutterer, and her name is Marie Kondo. Maybe you guys have seen her before, and she helps people declutter. One of the weird things that she does, I mean, colossally weird, is when you're going to get rid of something that means a lot to you, you're supposed to thank the item for the wonderful place that it had in your life a shirt for putting it, clothing your, I don't know. It's weird. And I was just making fun of this gal. And then somehow by, you know, releasing the shirt from your life and thanking it for being such a wonderful shirt, then you were able to give it away and let it be a blessing to someone else. And so as I'm making fun of it, about 2 weeks later, I found myself buying her book. And I didn't tell my wife. Because I was intrigued by it. And so I read her book, and her book is just as goofy of a title as anything else. The Life-Changing Manga of Tidying Up, a Magical Story. And though I think that she is certifiably off her rocker with the whole thank the shirt for being your shirt, I kind of, in my own way, have taken that on, and I, instead of thanking the shirt, I thank God for this item in my life. Because for me, sentimental means this item was there at this point in my life, or this item represents this thing that happened in my life that was meaningful. But the item really doesn't have that value. The experience I had did, so I thank God for how that impacted me and what that was, and then kind of let it go. So I don't thank the item, I thank God. For me, that has a little more value to it, but nonetheless, the idea is to throw some things out. Once we throw things out, the next idea is to buy less. So that's the second idea I have for you here. I really believe this is where the problem is. I think we buy way too much stuff. Survey said that 62% of people admit to shopping just to cheer themselves up. 62% of all people buy things for the sole purpose of making themselves feel better. They're depressed, they go buy something so they don't feel as depressed. They feel inadequate, they buy something so that they feel more adequate. It's like this little hit of dopamine that they get when they purchase whatever it is that they might purchase. And purchasing is so easy nowadays. I mean, you can be sad anywhere and pull up Amazon and look for something to buy, and Amazon will provide you whatever that is in mass numbers, because everything that has ever been for sale in the world is apparently on Amazon. Gets rid of your bad feelings, helps you escape, it entertains you. Maybe it makes you feel important. Maybe you just like to find that really good deal, you know, and that's what drives you. You know, I want to find a good deal. You might not find that online, so you might have to go into actual stores to, you know, feel good about those kinds of things. But 62% of people admit to shopping just to cheer themselves up. It's a great prayer from someone thousands of years ago that struggled in the same way. Psalm 119, 36 and 37 says, "Give me the eagerness of your laws rather than a love for money." In other words, give me an eagerness for who you are, God, and what you are about, and not just for a love of money. And 37 says, "Turn my eyes from worthless things and give me life through your word." Again, you see this over and over again in the scriptures. Help me to let go of what's not important and grab a hold of what is important. How many understand that just one handful is enough, and I don't need two handfuls and three and four and so on and so forth? I mean, here's the ultimate goal, to have a life that is so wrapped up in who God is and what God thinks about you and what God is up to in you. To have so full a life of God that you don't need stuff to feel good any longer. You don't need stuff to fill a void, because God is filling that void. To let God decide who you are, to let God tell you what your value is instead of the stuff that you own. I want to encourage you in a practical way with this when it comes to buying less, is truly buy less and value experiences more than stuff. Go do something. Go see something. Go experience something together. I mean, think of your memories as a family or as a couple or with people in your life. They're around experiences. I mean, if I ask each one of you to list off the things that you got last year for Christmas, I mean, unless you got like a Corvette, you know, or you got something like major, most of you would be like, I'd be embarrassed if you asked me that and I had to answer that, especially in front of all my family who got me stuff. You know, I don't remember that. But if I ask you, what did you do last year around Christmas time, you'll be able to tell me that. Because the experiences are where the value is. The experience is where our joy comes from. Our experience is our relationships with one another. So I want to encourage you with that, that come to the point of valuing experiences more than just stuff. Because you're more likely to remember an experience than, you know, what's on your receipt from your last trip to Target. You can't even walk out of that store, apparently, without spending less than $100. least that's been the experience in my family. Maybe that's not the case for you. Or maybe you just, you know, we got this really great deal. If you love to get things on sale and get really great deals, I encourage you to shop at Kohl's. Because you can spend at $60 at Kohl's, and when you get to the register, they say, you just saved $63,000. Right? I'm just kidding, but it is kind of funny at Kohl's how much I save. My family would rather go on a trip than get stuff. Now, I mean, we still like stuff. Don't get me wrong. Like, we get each other stuff. But we love the experiences. We love to go do something. Just take the money we would have spent on this. Let's just go do something. You say, oh, yeah, but then it's gone. No, I have that memory forever. Whatever you buy me or whatever we buy each other, like, we'll be entertained for a while, but it's going to just go on a shelf. Or if you are going to buy stuff, let the stuff be connected to an experience. Like, if a guy has a fishing rod on his list, that's a great thing to buy because that's something that creates the experiences. I mean, first service, there was like a couple people that were like nudging their wives right then, like, fishing rod. At the same point, he may not need like a $500 fishing rod. He could probably do it with a $30 one. See, and then the wives are nudging back, see. Because you're going to catch just as many fish. None. But for real, like, what are the things that we can buy each other that are about the experience? Then it's just about accumulating more things that are just going to go in some box that we're going to store, have to store in some place for who knows how long. So these are the things that I kind of encourage us to do is throw out and buy less. Understand there is fear and sentiment when it comes to these things, but to work through some of those. Because when we let go of stuff, we can bless others with those items. When we let go of stuff, we can be freed to do good with that we do have, that we still do obtain or have in our lives. So Pastor Paul wrote to Pastor Timothy. I want to read his words. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 17 through 19. He says, teach those who are rich in this world not to be proud and not to trust in their money, which is so unreliable. Don't trust in money. He said their trust should be in God. The focus we're trying to go on here, who richly gives us all we need for our enjoyment. There's where the void is filled, is in God. In the next verse, he says, tell them to use their money to do good, because we can do good with what we have then, instead of just spending it on ourselves, our own stuff. They should be rich in good works and generous to those in need, always being ready to share with others. And by doing this, they will be storing up their treasure as a good foundation for the future so they may experience true life. Isn't this the kind of life that you want? It's the kind of life that I want. It's not weighed down by all the stuff that I have. Because it's better to have less of what I don't need, less of what doesn't matter, and to have more of what does. And we need to challenge ourselves to figure out some way, somehow, to throw stuff out as well as to buy less stuff. And that in this process, I think we can find peace in our lives. We can find this path to fulfillment that stuff will never provide for you and me. Because you are not your stuff. You are a child of God. You see, this luggage pile over here maybe represents you and I and the luggage that we carry around in our lives. And one of the gifts that we can give each other, one of the gifts that is a gift that is more valuable than anything you can buy on Amazon or any other place, is like that gift of love, or that gift of forgiveness, or that gift of acceptance. I mean, as we travel through life, these suitcases that we hold are so heavy with all kinds of hurts and pains and struggles that we've had. Some people are so protective of those pains, they will cover them up, and if you come near, they will bark at you. They do not want you to see what they've experienced. They have been wounded, and they don't want to be wounded again, and they protect these things. But to be the kind of person that can walk through life with another individual and not judge them for the things that they have done, the wrongs that they have done, the hurts that they have caused, that they are trying to hide in this trunk that are so heavy, it's keeping them from enjoying life. It's keeping them from experiencing the life that they want to experience. And to be able to hear from you, you are loved. God loves you. I love you. You already are forgiven. God forgives you. I can forgive you. Maybe people won't forgive you, but God forgives you. For people who are going through life with pains and hurts and things that they have done or things they've done to others, things that have been done to them, and to say, I love you, I care about you, I will do my best to love you unconditionally, not based on anything that you've done, but because of who you are. Because that's the kind of God that we serve. And we tend to experience these hurts and pains in life, and then we want to buy stuff, consume stuff, to really cover it up, to mask it, to not have any alone time or quiet space where we're thinking about these things, where they rattle around in our brains. I just want to be entertained. I just want the lights to keep flashing and the bings to keep binging, and somehow, some way, I'm going to get through this whole thing. But this holiday season, maybe already at Thanksgiving or coming up here at Christmas, you're going to be sitting around the table with these people that are called your family. And I want you to know that every single person in your family has hurt you in some way. And you have hurt every person in your family in some way. And though that is significant and though that is important, what is more significant and what is more important is that you are able to forgive. That you are able to say, I need to offer to you the thing I so desperately need. I need to offer grace to you because I need grace. I need to offer forgiveness for you and what you did because I need to be forgiven for what I've done. How will we possibly lighten our load? How will we possibly ever ditch these things that we drag around with us if we're unable to give and offer to others the thing that lightens their load? How will we ever expect our load to be lightened? So I want to challenge you this December to travel light. And not to just buy another thing or just continue the busy noise of life so that we don't have to deal with these things. But to realize as you come together with other people, and if you have that feeling, you know that feeling that wells up in you where you're like, I don't want to be around this person. I don't want to see this person. I want to sit across from this person. I don't want to be in the same room, the same house. I don't want to be in the same city with this person. I don't know how bad your issues are. The issues are real. The issues are significant. The issues maybe have to be dealt with. I don't want to trivialize what that is. But is there room to offer to somebody else the thing that you so desperately need? Because if there's room in that, just maybe, the Spirit and the miracle and the power of Christmas can enter in and change your world. Because the gifts we give like that are so much more important than a stupid farting toy or twerking llama or $1,200 phone, or you name it. You can't get love and grace and forgiveness on a Black Friday sale. But it was offered for free on Good Friday. So I challenge you this year to travel light and to help others that come across your path to travel light as well. And don't just fill it with more stuff, but find ways to throw out, to give away, to let go, and to travel as light as you can. Let's pray. Father God, we thank you for your love and for your grace. Lord, I pray just as simply as I know how to help us have the life that we want, in realizing that some of the stuff we have just might be robbing us from that life we want to have. Help us to have you be our focus, that your love, your grace, is the thing that we need to make it through. And that as you have offered us love, that you have offered us grace, that you have offered us forgiveness, though we don't deserve it and we've done nothing to earn it, that we too can be ambassadors of yours and offer it to others. This will be a season where we can lighten our load. Maybe we can help others travel lightly on their journey as well. For this place is not our home. We are just traveling through. We thank you that you are our travel guide that guides us to the place of truth, the place of hope, and that you have prepared a place for each one of us. We love you and we thank you for that truth. In Jesus' name, and all God's people said, amen.